It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy. Howdy, folks. Dr. History here with more stories from the Old West. You know, last week we talked about some cowboy stories, and I'd like to continue that again this week. I take this from a book by Rick Steber. Now, he's an author of more than 30 books, and he's received a lot of awards and recognition. So I'd highly recommend you looking for Rick Steber and any of his writings. So we're going to continue with a few odds and ends stories. So the first one I'm going to tell you is about a guy named Oswald West. He visited Klamath Falls, Oregon, the summer of 1905, and here's what he said, quote, "I found myself in that town on business, connected with the state land office. While taking an after-dinner stroll along the main street, I was to witness what, to me, was a distressing performance." Well, he continues, "A couple of cowhands, well liquored up, were exhibiting an undersized, footsore team of mules hitched to a top buggy, he says. They would race then up and down the street to demonstrate how quickly they would be stopped in front of a saloon where drinks would be ordered. Well, he continues, "Seeing that the abused animals needed a friend, I made inquiries as to whether they were for sale. Being told that the outfit was for sale for $150, I informed the gentleman I was not interested in the buggy and harness, only the mules. The deal, therefore, appeared to be off. Well, along about 1 o'clock in the morning, I was awakened by a loud knock at my hotel room door. 'Are you the fellow who wanted to buy our mules?' I was asked. 'We struck a deal for $90, on the condition I pay them $10 in advance. You see, they badly needed whiskey money. In the morning,' he says, 'I discovered the mules had not been broken to ride. This necessitated me hiring a saddle nag, the only horse available, that was somewhat advanced in years. Stiff in the shoulders and unshod, an old stock saddle supplied.' He says, 'I rode this animal to within about 15 miles of Ashland before it became footsore and weary, so I removed the saddle and bridle and hiked, leading my two mules. Well, the mules were shipped by train from Ashland to Salem, where they were turned out to pasture to live out the rest of their lives.'" Okay, the next story is about a doctor, a cowboy doctor. Denny O'Brien was the driver for Dr. Marsden, the, quote, cowboy doctor. Dr. Marsden would go anywhere within several hundred miles to treat a sick or injured cowboy. Denny told of one trip he made in 1898. Here's what he said, quote, "Doc Marsden had a brother, George, who was a bookkeeper at the P Ranch. When George suddenly became ill, they sent for the doctor. We got there after midnight, and by then George was already dead. Poor Doc, he took it hard. Doc, who was worn out from the ordeal, fell asleep under a pile of blankets while I drove the 60 miles home. It was so cold that night that my hands got to hurting me terribly. I changed teams at the Narrows, and my hands didn't hurt me anymore. When we drove into Burns, it was 42 degrees below zero. I made sure Doc was taken care of, and then I stumbled into Brody Johnson's saloon. I started for the stove, but Brody stopped me. Here's what he said. Quote, "Stay away from the stove or you'll lose your hands," he warned. He cut off my gloves, my hands were white as chalk, and sent one of his customers to fetch a pan of coal oil and another of snow. Here's what he says. Brody alternated rubbing my hands with snow and then coal oil. Not until about 4 a.m. did the circulation begin to come back into them. And I have no words to tell you how those hands ached. Well, the next morning, my hands were as black as coal. The skin peeled off, and oh, they ached intolerably. But old Brody, God bless him, he saved my hands. When the weather gets cold, my hands bother me some. Suppose they always will. I thought that was interesting, considering the treatment he gave him. I'm surprised that he did survive. So here's another one. One of the last major cattle drives on the high desert got underway in February 1926. The herd ran out of feed where it was being held on the upper Crooked River, and the cattle were to be driven to the railhead in Bend, over there in Oregon, and transported to Klamath Falls, where a large quantity of hay had been purchased. Now, an old cowboy named Harold Baker related the story. He says, quote, "There were seven of us, counting the cook, trailing 2,150 head of steers. The morning we pulled out, it turned cold and stormy. The first night, we had 10 inches of wet snow drop on us. Conditions were miserable. Took 7 days to complete the drive, and the last couple, we had a steady stream of reporters and citizens coming to take pictures. They thought it was a pretty big deal." Well, he continues, "We reached Bend, and extra police had been put on to keep the crowds back. Just as the leaders were reaching the stockyard, the leaders of the cows, an engine let off steam. He says it spooked the animals, and they stampeded. They ran about a half mile before we could turn them. There were two small corrals at the stockyard, which held about a carload apiece. We had to keep the herd in the street, drive a little branch into the corral, load them into car, and do it all over again. It took us several hours. We rode the train with the cattle and unloaded them in Klamath Falls. The boss was so pleased with the job we had done that he treated us to supper at the fanciest restaurant in town. But having spent 8 days in wet weather, driving cattle and loading and unloading them, we were pretty rank smelling. Can you imagine, folks?" Well, he continues, "There were some ladies at a nearby table that acted as though they were about to faint, and the waiters didn't much want to wait on us until Seth loosened the purse strings and let it be known he was willing to spend good money." So I guess the ladies were able to put up with a little bad smell. Now, this next story, folks, you might consider this a bit of a myth, but I think you might enjoy it. So picture this. Cigarette smoke hung like a thick ground fog in the crowded saloon. Cowboys stood belly to the bar, throwing back their heads, tossing down drinks. All of a sudden, the swinging doors were flung open, and a high-pitched voice barked over the din, quote, "Big Ed's a-comin', Big Ed's a-comin'." Well, patrons scattered in every direction, leaving behind only the bartender. Within a few minutes, there was the sound of a great whirlwind outside. One section of the wall collapsed inward, and a huge, red-bearded man riding a 10-foot-tall polar bear and using a log and chain for reins and a live rattlesnake for a whip rode in and dismounted. He hollered, quote, "Give me a drink." And the building shook like a toothpick. The bartender nervously set a bottle of whiskey on the bar, slid it toward the stranger, and returned to cower in the far corner. The stranger grabbed it in his fist, drank it all in one tremendous gulp, and then chewed the bottle and swallowed it. "Sir, would you care for another?" stuttered the timid bartender. The big man shook his head and muttered, "Nah." He remounted the polar bear, and just before he swung the rattlesnake's whip, he called to the bartender, "Don't have time for another drink. Ain't you heard? Big Ed's a-coming." Okay, a bit of a myth, but I thought you might enjoy that one. Now, here's an interesting story about a settler who, increased his prosperity by certain means. You see, much of the West was considered open range until the homesteaders arrived to string barbed wire around land they claimed as their own. So the Homestead Law of 1862 entitled any citizen of the United States to acquire 160 acres of the public domain, providing they lived on the property for 5 years. Well, in 1877, the Desert Land Act allowed homesteaders to claim 320 acres if they lived on the land and they had to irrigate it. So John Haley, a wagon freighter, related the following story about a homesteader. And here's what he said. "I was down to Rock Creek, crossing, and a feller by the name of Butler had settled there on a homestead. He had himself quite a pile of meadow hay, and I stopped to see if I could buy a little hay for my team. Butler told me, 'Nah, can't spare none, need it for my own stock.' Well, now I knew he hadn't come in there with much, and I mentioned that fact. He agreed, and he said, 'When I took my claim, I only had one yoke of steers,'" remember that, folk, steers, "'and an old milk cow. But by careful management, I now have 35 head, mostly calves and yearlings.'" Well, the guy, the teamster, said, he said, quote, "I scratched my head. It was pretty evident that he had been helping himself to calves on the open range. But a man doesn't want to just come right out and call someone a rustler. So I told him, 'Mr. Butler, you got yourself a mighty special milk can. I inquired if you wanted to sell her.' Of course he didn't." So it's interesting how two steers and a milk cow managed to end up with 35 calves and cows.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now, here's another story thought you might like. This takes place over in Burns, Oregon. There was an outfit called the Island Ranch, and it was south of Burns, Oregon. It was the northern headquarters of the Miller and Lux cattle outfit. In the fall, cowboys gathered well-fed steers off the open range for the trail drive over to Winnemucca, Nevada. Now, that's a bit of a drive, folks, clear across the state of Oregon. They always looked forward to reaching town where they would enjoy a wild night of celebration. One year, the cattle refused to be driven. They kept trying to double back, and it forced the cowboys to work hard to keep them lined out and headed south. After 2 weeks of fighting the cattle, they approached the Humboldt River, and the cattle, smelling water, snorted, threw their heads in the air, and broke into a trot. Well, once their thirst was quenched, the cowboys drove them on toward the railroad stockyard. As they eased up the street, one of the cowboys rode ahead to open the gate. Now, here's where things take a bit of a turn. An engineer chose that particular moment to begin ringing his bell on the train. Well, the herd of steers stampeded, and for the remainder of that day, the Miller and Lux cowboys roped and pulled steers from backyards and alleyways in the town of Winnemucca. They worked until dark, and then they put up their horses and retired to the nearest saloon. Well, as you can imagine, spirits flowed like spring water. Late that night, as they grumbled about the extra work, one of the men suggested, quote, "We ought to find that engine and steal the bell so other cowboys won't have to suffer like we did." So the following day, when they turned toward home, the bell was in their possession. To this day, it hangs at the Island Ranch and rings three times a day for breakfast, dinner, and supper. Okay, now this next one, I think you'll enjoy this one. So there's an old cowboy, he greeted a guy named Rankin Crow and Harold Johnson as they rode into the Alvord Ranch headquarters. He said to these guys, quote, "You fellas are pretty fair hands. Thought you might be able to help. We've got a horse, and every time we go to hitch him up, he lays down. Know anything we can do to cure that?" "Yep," said Rankin. He ordered the problem horse hitched to a hay wagon alongside a gentle horse. And while this was being done, Rankin opened his bedroll, removed a firecracker that he'd been keeping for a special occasion, and he slipped it into his pocket. "You drive," Rankin directed his companion, while Harold crawled up on the seat, gathered up the lines, and it was at that point that the problem horse decided to lie down on the ground. Rankin went to the horse. He tried talking to the horse and petted it with affection. The old cowboy said, "We tried that and it don't work." Well, Rankin ignored the remark, continued to rub the horse, stroking its neck and working his way down the length of the animal. He reached into his pocket, withdrew the firecracker, and slipped it under the horse's tail. He was able to light the fuse, and without anyone taking notice. Then he said, "I think he's about ready to move," and he stepped away from the horse and wagon. Well, the firecracker exploded with a sharp bang. The horse pulled himself up, and with hind legs kicking, he took off running. After about a mile, Harold was able to gain control of the team. From that day forward, the horse, which turned out to be actually a hard worker with no bad habits, was known as, you guessed it, Firecracker. Okay, here we go with another short story. And this is a story about a train wreck. It seems there were two trains, one going east, the other going west. They crashed on a blind curve. All the crewmen and the passengers were killed. So along comes a railroad investigator who is dispatched to the scene to determine the cause of the accident. He discovered only one eyewitness, a range rider. He interviewed him, asking him to relate the details of the terrible collision. Well, said the cowboy, "I happened to be up there on the ridge herding a maverick I picked up back in the dry wash. I was staying back, not pushing, none too terrible hard, poking along, minding my own business, not thinking about much of nothing. Except I was kind of wondering what the cook was going to be fixing for dinner. Right about then, I sure could have used me a cup of strong coffee." "If you don't mind, could you skip to the train wreck?" Asked the investigator. "Sure. Well, anyway, I seen one train coming one way and the other coming right at him. I'll bet they was going 40 miles an hour or thereabouts. Looked to me like they was fixing to meet on the blind curve at the foot of the ridge." "Did you try to warn them?" "Nah. You didn't even think about trying to stop them?" "There wasn't time." "Well, just exactly what did you think?" "I thought to myself, two trains on the same track, now that's a heck of a way to run a railroad." And he probably didn't say heck. Okay, here we go. Another one. According to this yarn, a cowboy named Slim returned to the bunkhouse after having what we call a wild spree in town the night before. Well, the other cowboys called greetings and said, did you have a good time? Well, not too good, drawled Slim. When I got to town, I had $100, but now I'm flat broke. Not a thin dime to my name. Well, what'd you do with it? I'll tell you. First thing I did was go to the Pastime and order a shot of whiskey for myself and a round for the house. Then I ordered another. When I paid the bill, it came to $15. I went across the street to the A&Z and bought a round for the house there. A sweet gal named Rosie got hold of me, and I couldn't have got rid of her even if I'd wanted to, so I asked her if she would care to have dinner with me. We ate, and I bought a few more rounds. We were having quite a time. I paid for dinner and drinks, came to $40. After that, we moseyed down to the waterhole, had a few more drinks, ended up spending 25 more, and now I'm flat broke. Now hold it, said one of the cowboys. That doesn't add up. You spent 15, 40, and 25. Now, if my math is right, that comes to $80, $80. So where did the rest of it go? I don't know, said Slim, shaking his head. I must have blown that last 20 foolishly. I thought that was okay. Now, here's a true story that happened in the Old West. You know, it's marked by distinct eras. First, of course, were the Indians. Then came the mountain men trapping the streams for the fur-bearing animals. Following them were, of course, the wagon pioneers hungry for land. And then, of course, the miners were lured by the promise of striking it rich. And the native inhabitants, of course, the Indians, they were pushed off their ancestral grounds and confined to reservations, which in most cases was probably the worst ground that could be found, the ground that none of the white people wanted. Well, the interior was thrown open, and there was an influx of ranchers who recognized the great potential. They rushed in to claim vast tracts of land. They drove in herds of cattle from Texas and ranged them on the plentiful grass. For the first two decades, the winters were open, and cattle foraged year-round. Hay was put up only for saddle horses and barnyard stock. Then came the summer of 1888, when one of the worst droughts on record. Water holes dried up, cattle died, and those that survived went into winter in terrible condition. You see, folks, they always tried to fatten up the cattle in the summertime so they could make it through the winter. A mild winter would have been hard on the stock, but this winter was like no other in history. In November, the first storm swept down from the Arctic. Over the next 4 months, storm after storm surged across the West, bringing freezing cold and snow. To survive, the cattle stripped bark from willows along the streams, and as a last resort, they chewed on each other's manes and tails. Cattle died by the tens of thousands. Well, that devastating winter was known as the Great Equalizer, and as you can imagine, many of the ranchers went broke. Some attempted to rebuild from scratch. Others never even tried. They knew the era of the cattle baron was pretty much done. And that is kind of a sad tale among the ranchers. And here's another story about a horse they called the Black Demon. A guy named Dick Stanley was a world champion bronc rider. And when his days as an active performer were nearing the end, he put together a Wild West show that featured cowboys and Indians, ropers and trick riders, kind of like Buffalo Bill's Wild West shows and some of those others. But the star attraction was a stallion known far and wide as the Black Demon. Now, at the finale, Black Demon, all fire and fury, would be led into the arena, and this Dick Stanley would call out, quote, "This is the meanest outlaw, the worst buck and bronc in existence. He'll poke a hole in the wind and move faster than gossip at a church social. When he gets to popping leather, it takes 15 minutes for his shadow to catch up with him." Well, the crowd was ready. Stanley threw out the challenge. Here's what he said. "Is there a red-blooded bronc rider in the attendance?" As an added inducement, he offered $50 cash to the man who could ride Black Demon. Well, usually a confident cowboy stepped over the rail and sauntered into the arena, only to be humbled in front of family and friends by the devil horse, Black Demon. During a performance in California, Stanley could not interest even a single volunteer into attempting to ride Black Demon. So he kind of chided the men. He said, asking if there were not one man with the guts to ride, and still no one stepped forward. "All right," announced Stanley, "I'll have a go at him." So Stanley hoisted himself onto the saddle. The blindfold was removed and the snubbing horse cast away. Black Demon reared over backwards, and Stanley was pinned to the ground. Black Demon struggled to his feet and ran away, but Stanley remained on the ground, motionless. He was dead. So I guess that's the end of Black Demon and Stanley. You know, this is a bit of an interesting story. I think you might like this one. You know, some of the early cowboys who came west were former slaves, freed from the Civil War. One of the best black riders to ever spur a bronc was a guy by the name of George Fletcher. Now, the Pendleton Roundup, of course, you know, is one of the most famous and still is up there in Oregon. So this George Fletcher rode in the finals against a guy named Jackson Sundown, who was a Nez Perce Indian, and a white man named John Spain. Well, the horse that the Nez Perce Indian drew, he didn't make it. The Indian got behind, lost his balance, was thrown, and disqualified. So the white man, this guy named Spain, he drew a horse called Long Tom. It was a big sorrel that had a habit of throwing down his head and jerking the rider forward. Well, during his ride, it looked like Spain grabbed leather to keep from being thrown. And folks, if you touch the horse or the saddle or anything with your free hand, you are disqualified. Well, the judges did not disqualify him, and the crowd, they saw what happened, and they booed. They knew it wasn't right. So the former slave Fletcher, George Fletcher, he drew a horse called Hotfoot, and the crowd roared its approval of the ride. One observer stated that Fletcher looked like a rubber band nailed to a stick. There seemed to be no doubt in the crowd's mind who had won the contest. But the judges announced that John Spain, the white guy, had been awarded the championship. The judge's decision caused quite a controversy that continues to this day. It was said they discriminated against Fletcher because of the color of his skin. Well, now that's not the end. The crowd rose to its feet and chanted Fletcher's name. Fans mobbed him. His shirt was torn into strips, and each person who took a strip paid Fletcher $5. He received several times more money than did Spain for winning. Well, folks, that's kind of the end of the stories that I've got for now. I hope you like just a little potpourri of short stories. And again, this author is Rick Stieber. A lot of good books he's written, and I'd highly recommend, if you get a chance to pick up something from him, that you do it. So for now, folks, you have a good week.